All right, guys. Welcome once again to your Don's Lifestyle Podcast. I am Brad Howard. And, of course, John Barbin's on the phone. We got some really interesting stuff we're going to talk about today. I'm not going to say groundbreaking necessarily, but some definitely newsy things things that are going down in the supplement industry that you definitely need to know about, especially when it comes to recalls that are coming in left and right over some things. This is really interesting. I'm kind of glad we're going to cover this. So, John, you've got a boatload of links and research and stuff that we've been just kind of talking about over the last couple of minutes. Let's go ahead and dive into this thing and get going.
All right. So there's a dietary supplement ingredient that was marketed for in the bodybuilding supplement market that was being marketed for aromatase inhibition. So basically, in men, okay, so in bodybuilders who take testosterone, one of the side effects, the estrogenic side effects, the development of breast tissue and that sort of stuff, is from the testosterone converting to estrogen. And so bodybuilders who are taking high levels of testosterone, that happens because all men have an enzyme. It's called aromatase that converts some of it to estrogen. Now, in a normal guy, that's just normally part of how our physiology, that's just what happens, and there's nothing wrong with that. But when you have chemically induced higher levels of testosterone, depending on the activity of that enzyme, the aromatase enzyme, you're going to get some conversion of testosterone to estrogen. It's just the way we're built. So we're not built to have tons of extra testosterone, so that's why some of that breast tissue develops. Now, even in guys going through puberty, some guys develop some breast tissue because that when their testosterone levels are high when they're in their teens and they're growing, that just happens. So it's not unheard of for that to happen to a guy when he's just going through puberty. That sometimes that happens. But when you're done with that and you're in your 20s and older, and if you start taking testosterone, one of the major side effects is this conversion to estrogen. So based on that, there's a group of black market drugs. They're regular drugs, but I mean they get sold on the black market to bodybuilders to block that conversion. So they're aromatase inhibitors. So one of the things the supplement industry does is they market the idea of aromatase inhibition, but with a supplement instead of with actual drugs. And I'm not going to pick on any one product, but recently there has been a product, a grouping of products that have been recalled because they contain a drug that's been, I guess it's an un, there was a debate whether or not it was a drug or not, and it's turned out that it's a drug and not a supplement as by the FDA's rules, but it's being marketed and sold as a supplement. So, and the drug is a aromatase inhibitor. And so guys who were buying any one of these four or five brands of supplements were actually taking a drug they didn't realize was as potent and was a drug the way it was. Now, the other interesting point is this gets into the marketing of supplements. So the claims you can make on the front of a bottle of any supplement, depending what country you're in, let's just focus on North America, the claims you can make rest on it, whether or not there's research on the ingredients in that particular supplement. And in this case, a piece of research was done and a bunch of crazy claims came out of it, like massive increases in testosterone and testosterone to epitestosterone ratios and free and total testosterone going up by hundreds of percent with this one of these supplements that contained this drug. So now if you're starting to put two and two together, there's, if you walk into a store, a supplement shop, and you're like, hey, I want something that'll help boost testosterone, or, I want to gain some muscle. And the guy's like, oh, that product right there, there's clinical research to say it'll increase, testosterone 300-400%. And you're like, great, that's a supplement can do that? And you're like, oh, yeah, right here. There's research right there to prove it. And now it comes out that product has had a drug in it all along, including, the research, when it was done, that product must have had the drug in it also when it was tested. So this piece of research showing that this quote supplement can increase testosterone, really that the people that were researching it were just testing a drug, and they probably didn't know that, or they didn't do, my guess is they didn't do their due diligence to find out what was actually in this product. They literally just took the product that was sent to them and tested it, and that's the results they got. Without, I don't know, I haven't spoken to the researchers and I haven't looked at their methods, but my guess is that they didn't send the product for third-party testing to prove what was in it. They probably just got the shipment from the manufacturer and just believed that it had whatever it said it had in it. So that's basically, and that's not uncommon. That happens frequently in supplement research where a lab, and this happened in our lab too. We just took a product. The manufacturer sent us a supplement. We dosed our subjects with it and then we reported the results. But at no point did we take the supplement after it was sent to us and send it out to an independent third-party lab to test what the ingredients were. So if we didn't, and since we didn't do that, we can't actually validate what we gave to these people. And now this is different than a drug trial. If we were doing a drug trial, that type of testing would be done. But with supplements, that testing, at least when I was doing this type of research, wasn't done. And I don't even know if that level of screening is, I don't know if that's mandatory yet. The last time I heard, it wasn't. I mean, a good lab that really knows what it's doing would go out of their way to do it, but it doesn't mean that it's always happening. So That's a good example. That's a good example for you to see how a supplement makes it to the shelf with outrageous claims, backed by research, and someone could look at that going, wow, supplements are really potent, and then, you know, a couple of years later, it comes full circle, finds out it's actually got a drug in it.
Yeah. What was the drug that that was in there that the FDA is actually recalling because of?
The drug is, it's in here. I'm looking right at the piece of research. I can't find it right now. I'll get that to you in a sec. I can't even see it. Its short form is ATD. And weren't you just looking at it too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. 317 keto. I can't even say it. Anyways, we'll write it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I can't even pronounce that. So, but anyways, the point is this isn't an isolated case. This has happened before. So, that's how some products. There has been instances in the past where there's speculation that the manufacturer would actually, I'm not naming any particular manufacturer, but it has appeared that in the past the manufacturers have allowed the first run of a product to actually have a real drug in it, and when it hits the market, everybody that buys it on the first run is going to get phenomenal, you know, obviously drug level results, and then the second or third run, you take the drug out of your third or fourth run of the product, so it's clean. So if the FDA ever tries to test it, there's nothing left in it. It's just supplement, and it's all on the up and up. But by that time, there's an underground buzz to it because the people who've taken it, the first couple of runs of it when it first hit the market, are going to swear by it because they actually got. They were basically using a real steroid. So,
right. So basically, they laced the thing with the drug to give it the street cred to take off.
Yeah,
which it did.
Right. You lace it with a drug. You get the street cred. It takes off. Then once people are buying it and maybe you're coming under the FDA's radar, then you clean up what's in it, and then you can't get busted. And all those old batches are gone. There's no proof that the old batches ever had anything in it.
Well, on the other side of it too is it's on to the next thing too by that time, wouldn't you think?
Depends. It could be on to its you're going to be marketing a new product within 2-3 years anyways, but if that thing has if that particular item has got enough, like you said, street cred, it's still going to sell. It's still going to sell.
Sure.
But this supplements are people are very impatient with supplements. Customers are typically excited to try the next new one, but then their expectations usually aren't met, so they become disenchanted with the product pretty quickly and then want the one that comes after it. And that kind of goes on and on and on. It just goes over and over and over. So I think it's because, and this comes back to the whole story about the disconnect between people's expectations with and without drugs. People are, you know, a certain group of people who buy supplements are typically people who really want to use drugs but are kind of scared to use drugs, so they'll try to mix and match a cocktail of supplements hoping they'll get drug-like effects without ever using a drug. And they're the ones who are most susceptible to falling for most of the supplement marketing and spend a lot of money on it. And they're also the impatient ones who want to gain 20, 25 pounds of muscle in 8 weeks, and every time it doesn't happen, they fall for the next round of supplement marketing. Now, that doesn't mean certain supplements aren't useful. It just means that they're not going to produce the results that these people are hoping for. And those are the same people who constantly get had on the next big thing in supplements. So that's what I mean by certain ones have a short life cycle where people bounce to the next one and the next one, but other ones that stand the test of time, like creatine and some of the pre-workouts that have just some creatine and caffeine, I mean, people know what they're getting. They don't have unrealistic expectations, and they're like, yep, that one serves the purpose, and I like it, and I'll just keep using it. Right. But if you take it, if you take a pre-workout with some creatine and caffeine, you like the way it feels, you know, you have a realistic expectation, and the results you're getting meet your expectation, there's no reason for you to bounce away from that product. You know, you may try other ones that have a better flavor or something, but other than that, you're like, oh, I know what to expect from my pre-workout supplement. But less, I guess, realistic people or newbies or people with hoping for drug-like results or people with just a lack of patience want to believe that that product's literally going to be the same as injecting testosterone. And when it doesn't produce that result, they're just like, okay, that sucks. I want the next product. Right. And so they're just – you see the difference there? So
– yeah.
You know, if you have realistic expectations, you can find supplements that you'll be completely satisfactory and you're not going to be constantly bouncing around. But those aren't – that's the minority of supplement purchasers, I think. Or at least that's the more – let me say it the other way around. That's the more mature, finally figured it out and knows what a supplement will do for him kind of guy versus a newbie who actually thinks he's going to get steroid-like results from supplements.
Right. So, all right, let's kind of not switch gears, but since we touched on supplement marketing and things like that, one of the things we covered inside of Insiders Club, and we actually need to flesh out the rest of these the supplement company stuff, but the actual aspect of the ingredients inside of most supplements, and it was like you were saying, and you'll see where I'm going with this in just a second, but because of cost, there's typically only one ingredient that really does a lot of the heavy work, right?
Yeah, when we formulate a supplement, you're going to end up with one ingredient, maybe two, but mostly one that's going to account for 80% of your cost. And so,
right.
And so you can't just pour in three or four really effective ingredients into the same product because your cost will go through the roof. And that's just because that's what the industry standard is set. So if we try to go buy raw ingredients, and there's a half a dozen, maybe even, you know, seven or eight ingredients that I would think are worth taking. But if you try to put them all into one product, it's going to be like a $600 a month product, and that's, you just, no one can afford that. So
yeah, they'd just buy roids.
Yeah, exactly. Basically. So, well, for that cost, yeah. So
yeah.
The point is you're kind of left to have to pick and choose with your, you know, monthly supplement budget. Like, let's say you can afford 50 to 100 bucks on supplements a month. That's including protein.
As a consumer,
let's say that's what you allocate for supplements. You're like, and part of that, you know, let's put in the middle, 75 bucks. And let's say out of that, you have to buy your protein. So that's 30 or 40 bucks gone. So, what are you going to do with the other 30 or 40? You know, you can really only get one other really good potent ingredient for that price. You know, unless you do some serious bargain hunting, you might find two. But you're going to find them in like separate products where they're the driver. Because like I said, those main ingredients that really have good research, they're good ingredients, they come from a quality source, they actually can produce some results. Most of those cost enough that you can't really pile four or five of them into one product. Otherwise, you know, you just can't afford it. So now you're stuck. If your budget's, you know, somewhere between 50 and 100 bucks, you really only can pick your protein and one ingredient with good research and that can produce some results over time.
Right. Okay.
And then creatine is one exception because it's just really cheap.
Sure. Yeah, and caffeine.
Yeah, caffeine, I don't even consider that. I mean, people just people dose caffeine a million ways, right? They have coffee, they have you know, you drink a Coke or a Pepsi, you get caffeine that way. Like, people get caffeine so many ways, I almost don't consider it a supplement. I mean, it's in supplements, it's cheap. So, but I mean, if you want some of the other ingredients that may do something, they're pretty pricey. So you can't really have them all.
Yeah, you can't have the Brunswick stew of supplement.
Well, I mean, stuff. You just can't put like 5-HTP, Yohimbe, a test booster that actually has research and at the right dose. You just can't put all those in one product without blowing the cost right up.
Right.
So unless you have an unlimited budget up for supplements, you're just going to have to pick which one you think you can, which one you want to test and which one is most important to you at the time to allocate the rest of your monthly supplement budget, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay. So the reason I brought this up, I mean, obviously you're talking about a primary driver. We kind of got away from primary drivers, you know, for about the last 3 months. But, you know, one of the things I was doing the other day, I went in the store because I was just looking to get some basic protein. And, you know, I got looking around at a lot of the stuff, and it kind of, in order to actually avoid, you know, all of the marketing claims and things like that, if you start just really reading the labels, if you can understand which products are actually, or which ingredients are actually doing all the work, and what you'll find is most of the ones making the claims have the exact same ingredient in them. There's one. They might rejigger a bunch, some other stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's because each manufacturer is buying, they don't manufacture the ingredient. They buy it from somebody else.
Right.
So there's layers there, right? So like the people who make the supplement or who package it in the bottle with the label and market it and all that, they buy all the ingredients that are inside their product from the ingredient suppliers. They're the ones who who do the research on the ingredient and license the rights to make the claims and sell the product for whatever the claim is. But everyone buys from the same suppliers. So there's not really a whole lot of diversity in the industry. There's a couple of big players who get an ingredient licensed so that they're the only ones who are allowed to sell it, but that's pretty rare. Because if you're the ingredient supplier, you're like, well, I don't want to limit my business to just one marketer. I want everyone to use my ingredient. So it's really rare for a manufacturer and a marketing company to do an exclusive agreement for that one ingredient, because that they, you know, the manufacturer's just cutting off their ability to make money. Right. That would be, it's no different than like a car company that buys its brakes from a brake specialist who makes brake pads and shoes, and then they do a deal where they're the only car company they're ever allowed to sell their brakes to. Like, if you were the brake company, why would you do that? You'd want to sell it to every car company possible.
Right. And, you know, we're not just picking on the supplement industry. This is all industries. And this is the point I was going to make. You know, because, like, literally, even the stuff you see on TV, like, you know, underarm deodorant, I'll talk about underarm deodorant in particular, you know, toothpaste, you know, all of these things that, you know, you see all these different products that make claims, and I'm better than this one, and this one's this one, but they all have the exact same active ingredient. The packaging different, and the story is different. Like, for instance, like, how many guys, and be honest, would wear their woman's deodorant if they ran out? I mean, not very many. Most guys are like, I'm not wearing your deodorant, but if you look at the label, it's the exact same thing.
Oh yeah, lots of things are like that. The only thing that changes is the packaging.
Right. So the only difference is it smells a little different. It's like when Secret says it's strong enough for a man but made for a woman. Well, yeah, no shit, because it's the same thing. It just smells different.
Well, there was actually it was a marketing seminar I was listening to, and the guy was explaining why people just want things that seems specific for them. And he was explaining that there's a cleaning ingredient that's in carpet cleaner, toothpaste, dishwashing soap, laundry detergent, and some company engineered it so that out of one bottle, it was safe to consume, so you could put it in toothpaste, but you could also use it for like household items. You could wash your dishes, clean the carpet, like use it as shampoo. And he was like, wouldn't this be great? People will just go buy this one thing and it's your all-purpose cleaner. And it failed miserably because people didn't believe one thing could do all that.
Right.
Or they didn't want to accept the fact that something that they could brush their teeth with was also something they washed their clothes with. And so they were just like, oh, no, that doesn't make sense to me. What, you know, that can't possibly be it. So people, I don't know what the actual psychology is, but people, at least in our society, aren't ready to accept or don't want to believe or uncomfortable with the concept that there's way less diversity in the products they use than there really is. So they just didn't want to believe that that was the same cleaning agent. So instead, they'll spend way more money on multiple products as opposed to having the one that just did everything.
Yeah, and it's like I say, it's everywhere. I mean, it's fat loss marketing, weight loss marketing, same thing. I mean, basically, you got your primary driver, the caloric deficit, and there's different dressings on each one, each flavor. You know, they're just different flavors of it, but they all do the same thing.
I guess I could see how it would be boring if your life consisted of these catch-all things, like you had one cleaner that did everything, and like I guess your life would just seem, I don't know, less interesting if everything was that like kind of generic. I don't know. I can't really figure out why people would, if one thing could do all that stuff, I don't know why people wouldn't want it. But I guess somewhere in there they just don't.
Yeah, I mean we're not trying to ruin your buying experience by any means.
Oh yeah, well because it won't matter because you don't have a choice. There's a zillion things to choose from. Christ, if you just like the way one bottle looks compared to another, that's a thing.
Yeah, I mean there's even even the bottles and stuff are actually made to give you a feeling of status and things
like
that.
It's personal preference. Why didn't people buy different looking cars? All it is a. They all have four wheels. They all have a steering wheel, and they all get you to point A to point B. I mean, why would you actually – what difference would it really make? But everyone's got their personal preferences.
Well, it's not only that, but, I mean, you got stuff like – something like green beans. I mean, the same green beans that are in the store brand are the same ones that go in the, you know, the expensive brand. It's just the label is different. I mean, literally, they're manufactured at the same plant.
Oh, yeah.
You're just paying more for a label.
Yeah.
So, which is pretty interesting. But like I say, I mean, it's just – I guess the point is we're not trying to pick on the supplement industry in general because they just basically get nailed for a lot of the stuff, you know, and catch a lot of grief when, you know, other industries do the exact same thing, but there's really no health, you know, any type of health claim that comes along with it, that's where it kind of comes in.
And it gets touchy with the supplement industry because these are ingestibles. So I can sell you a T-shirt and if it didn't quite fit the way you hoped or whatever – there's no real danger there. You might just be like, man, I don't like the way that thing looks. But you're no worse for the wear. You just may not look as nice as you wanted it to, or the material wasn't as soft as maybe I promoted it, or something like that. But it's not going to really affect your life. Now, with a supplement, I sell you a supplement, you ingest it, and something goes wrong, and you have like a reaction, and it's because I put a drug in there and I never told you about it, and maybe you have a medical condition that is contraindicated with that drug, but since I'm telling you my product is one thing and it's not, and you take it not knowing there's a drug in there, and all of a sudden you have a reaction, I'm in big trouble. Like you could sue us, you could put me in jail for that one. So that's the big difference with ingestibles. You got to be, you're walking a fine line when you sell something that someone's putting inside their body and could potentially gets, I mean, you, if you, I mean, if you, that's why you need the research there. That's why you need some proof that what I just put in the bottle has been tested and shown to be safe to consume by humans. And if there is any contraindications based on the research, you put it right on the bottle. You say, not for people with diabetes, not for anyone with heart disease, not for whatever it is, you put all of that right on the bottle. And that way I'm covered when I put that product on the shelf. And if it says not for someone with diabetes and you take it and you have diabetes, I'm like, the warning label's right there. It's not my fault. You should have read the warning label. But if I'm being deceitful and I have a drug in there that I'm not telling you about, and you have a pre-existing medical condition that makes it dangerous for you to take that drug, now it's my fault because I've never told you what was in it. So there's the disconnect there, and that's why it's a lot touchier when it's an ingestible, and especially an ingestible with a dose response. So it's not the same as food, where food is basically food. You know, if you have a food allergy, I don't really need to put like claims on food. It's food. Like most humans can eat most foods unless they know they have an allergy, and most people know they have an allergy pretty quickly. So it's not quite the same. Whereas with a supplement where – and the problem with supplements in this particular case is that the way at least in North America, in the United States, the way the definition of what a supplement could be is relatively loose with very blurry edges. So in this case with the recall we were talking about, I haven't dug right into it. It could even be that the drug that's in there, the supplement manufacturer may have had some belief that under the existing laws for what a supplement actually is, they may believe that it fit into the definition. But in this case, the FDA came back saying, no, that doesn't fit in the definition of what a supplement is. This is a drug. So, and there has been precedent over the last 10, 15 years where certain pro-hormones, things like that, were, by the definition that the FDA outlined, pro-hormones counted. So things like DHEA and androstenedione and all those sort of things, they technically counted as supplements with the way the supplement laws were written. And then the FDA is like, well, no, but those don't count. So there is a bit of a gray area there where the FDA is not really, you know, doing their job either. That they're, it's not clear. Because part of the definition is anything extracted from, you could extract things from biological tissue. So that, hormones count for that. So it does get a little confusing as to what counts. And so supplement companies are going to push that as far as they can.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're getting fined, are they? They're just getting recalled.
I don't know if it's a – I know that the FDA has some information on their site about a recall. I don't know if they're getting fined. There's various steps, too. So recalls.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure if they said, hey, you got to recall all this and you didn't do it, you'd probably get fined. But, you know, if you're riding along and they're like, oh, yeah, dude, this isn't cool. And you're like, well, I'm following the rules according to what you laid out. I was like, yeah, we're changing the rules. Or whatever, you know, then it might be a different story.
Yeah, I don't think the FDA or the Canadian government or Australia or in the UK, I don't, and around the European Union, I don't know how many government agencies I don't think their first move is to shut the company down. Their first move is to, they review the research and then they're like, oh, okay, that needs to be recalled. So their first move is to ask for a recall.
Right.
Or to request them. They'd be like, you need to recall that and take it off the shelf. But, I mean, an actual monetary and we're fining you, I don't know if that's the first move. That may come after, I don't know, if it goes through court proceedings and they decide that they, you know, if it's one of these issues where they're not sure about the definition and then the manufacturer would be like, look, based on your definition, we thought we were doing – this was okay – I'm sure that has something to do with it versus knowingly completely circumventing the rules, in which case then they may be subject to some sort of fine.
Sure.
I'm not really sure, but I don't think it's a definite one or the other. I think it's case by case.
Yeah, I mean, you haven't seen evidence of it either way.
Well, not that I'm looking at it. Maybe. I mean, maybe somebody who's already researched this a little bit deeper might be able to tell us, but from what I can tell, they've just been asked to recall it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this real quick, and then we'll end off because I think this is interesting. What about the in a lot of the supplements, you see a lot of brand jacking and basically coming close to the actual name of a real drug.
Oh, they do it all the time. So one of the products is called Novedex. It's spelled Novedex. But the drug that they're trying to pretend it is called Novadex, Novadex. And anyone who's been in the drug culture for any amount of time knows what Novadex is and knows what it's used for. So when you see it was an anti-aromatase, it was an estrogen conversion blocker by a real drug company, AstraZeneca. But the supplement knockoff version, they make it sound just like it, and so the sort of uneducated person doesn't even realize that that's not the real drug. And that happens all the time. Like, there's a lot of products where they make it sound just like the real drug, and they just change one letter in the name, and so I think it's a bit silly. I can't believe anyone actually falls for that, but it's, you know, I don't know. I guess people who've never seen the real drugs but have heard about them wouldn't know the difference.
So it'd be like me calling myself Tony Rollins.
Tony Rollins instead of Tony Robbins. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and then so for people to be like, oh my, wait a minute, is that the motivational guy? You'd be like, yeah, and be like, oh, okay, I didn't know you're from South Carolina or North Carolina.
Yeah, well, yeah, by the time you find out, it's too late. I've already got you.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, same deal. So you literally, it's really that lowbrow. Change one letter in the name, And then, and it would be like changing an E to an I or something. So it's like the thing sounds identical. So.
Yeah, you wouldn't notice. I mean, you'd literally have to.
You have to line them up side by side to see what the difference is.
Yeah, because I could see a guy going, hearing about it and just kind of doing some research and then being like, holy shit, there's a supplement that does this. Let me go get that. I mean, that's not a drug.
Yeah.
Because I think supplements give people permission to, I guess, buy stuff that they think there's going to be druggy. You know what I mean? I think it's like a permission based thing. It's like, yeah, I'm not going to do steroids because that would make me bad.
But right, I'll dose supplements. Yeah.
Right. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
well, it's the taboo of things that are illegal.
Sure.
Right. Like in countries where testosterone is perfectly legal to walk into a store and buy, no one, these type of debates aren't even happening.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I mean, everybody's worked up on who's natural and who's not. And,
Because the concept of taking steroids has become taboo, so to speak, in North America.
Right.
And it's specifically in the United States, they've been scheduled as illegal to possess and traffic and that sort of stuff. So, but in other countries where you can just buy them, no one really cares.
Yeah, we've kind of talked about this before. Like what's the actual definition of performance enhancing? I mean, you know what I mean? From that definition, I mean, you should never be able to go get laser eye surgery if you play a sport.
Well, then you shouldn't be able to recruit a coach. Because that enhances your performance better than if you didn't have one.
Yeah.
And then if you can afford a better coach, that's just not fair because that's an unfair advantage that you have a better coach.
Oh, no, that's proven. I mean, if you read in Outliers, in Malcolm Gladwell's book, it basically says that, you know, the higher performers in most of the the majority of performers in each league, each professional league, all their birthdays cluster around the same areas.
Oh, yeah. So it starts at a young age. But anyways, we're getting off topic.
Yeah, it's just interesting, kind of skews off. But, yeah, I mean, that's just funny how it kind of goes that way, where you look in and there's basically just this masking of actual names. And, you know, I'm surprised there's nothing that can be done about it. But I guess, you know.
Yeah, there's bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, I'm sure.
This probably doesn't represent a whole lot of. I think in the grand scheme of things that from what I know of some conversations with the FDA, that they don't really care if. First of all, this is a small subsection of the population that's interested in muscle building drugs. Like, it's tiny. And then the ones who want to, it's from a government regulatory standpoint. If there's a few million guys in North America that are interested in building muscle, why would the government allocate resources to police this to the same degree as the entire food supply that all 350 million people are eating, or the weight loss industry that is literally every single adult in North America's at some point paid attention to weight loss and may have dabbled in buying a weight loss product. So what they do is they spend more time dealing with that than they do with these sort of things.
So if they come across a muscle building one, they're like, you got to get rid of it. That's a pretty big deal.
Oh, no, I'm not saying this is a big deal. I'm just saying things get recalled anyways. And,
oh, okay.
But what I'm saying is that I don't know how much further they go with it.
Gotcha,
for what I'm saying is the FTC the Federal Trade Commission has a well outlined document on the things you can and can't say about weight loss. They don't really have that for muscle building.
Gotcha.
So they've gone further into allocating resource to like really regulating weight loss, but they don't really have much of a formal regulation structure for muscle building. It's sort of like as it comes up, they're like, oh, yeah, we found out that thing has a drug in it. But it's not like they have a docket about this exact thing that explains what you can and can't say. Like they actually have rules on how much weight you can recommend or you can market that people can lose per week. And you just – if you go about beyond that, you're just flat out in violation of their rules.
Which is 2 pounds, right?
Yeah, it's essentially 2 pounds. And then you can see that. Anyone who's marketing weight loss can go see this document. They're like, it's literally against the law to say more than that based on what they've concluded. But with muscle building, there's no formal document you can go look up saying, oh, wait a minute, we're not allowed to say any more than this many pounds of muscle or this much strength gained or this much increase in testosterone. Like, that doesn't exist, right? They haven't allocated the resources for that.
Right.
Because
right
there's now. So many less people looking for it. It's just not much is going to happen if they bother doing that.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's, you know, not anybody really dying from that type of thing either. So.
Yeah, not really. So it's the worst that, and when it all comes down to it, the worst that happens is maybe just some people spent a little bit more money than they should have on a product that produced less results than they thought, or they ended up taking a, you know, in this case, they ended up taking a drug they didn't know they were taking, but it's probably not really going to hurt them.
Right.
So it's kind of it's kind of like the legislation there would be like, you know, don't lie, play nice, but no one really got hurt.
Yeah. Like I say, we'll end it. There's a couple other things I wanted to talk about, but they really skew from topic. So
yeah, I guess that's good for today. I mean, we just stayed on this one topic.
Yeah, exactly. I think next time, what do you want to talk about next time?
We'll get into, there's a really good question on the forums about what is the drawback or what's the rationale to the question of why can't I just take all my vitamins in a multivitamin and then just eat whatever food I want?
Right, and just to get your nutrition that way.
Yeah, so why not get your protein, carbs, and fat from just random food, doesn't matter what food it is, so not healthy food, but just any food, and then actually ensure you got your vitamins and minerals from a multivitamin, which you can easily do by taking a once-a-day multi.
Right.
So what, next week we'll get into we'll just debate that topic, and we'll just see where we end up with on the other side. Because I think the actual answer probably won't be what people think.
Yeah, and maybe that'll be one of those things we can pull in that one little mini study that guy did that Pilon was showing us, that the guy basically ate junk food the whole time.
Oh right,
And his health markers got better.
Yeah, there's another thing going. There's a completely other thing going on that question, without understanding body composition and the direction your body composition is changing, that question sort of can't be answered without talking about that too. So we'll get into that next week.
Yeah, that'd be really cool, man. Well, all right, guys. Well, once again, that is your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.